Hey guys, it's Vanessa with the Cleaning of John Doe. We've got a special episode for you today, and I'm here with Ethan.
Hello, everybody.
So we're taking up a bunch of questions. We had a whole bunch of different podcast hosts ask questions on your behalf. So this should be fun. Introduce you guys to some new shows, and yeah, let's get started.
Hi, this is Marissa from the Vanish podcast. Sandra Dennis wants to know, is your job a typical 9-to-5 job, or do you guys get called out at all different times?
So we sleep with our cell phones on and near our heads. My phone is set up to roll over to Ethan if I miss a call for any reason. Basically, we're on call 24/7, and then we put our guys on call 24/7 too, and that's pretty much how we do it.
Yeah, typically, you know, a hoarding job or a gross filth or something like that, we'll schedule that out. So if they call at, you know, 8 o'clock at night, I'm not going to rush out there and go do an estimate for something like that. It's not really considered an emergency situation. Whereas if someone was murdered or committed suicide, obviously that's a much more delicate situation. You want to get that taken care of right away. So we're on call all the time for that. Doesn't matter if it's, you know, Christmas morning or Thanksgiving dinner or out on a date, it's done. Go out and do the job.
Hello, this is Jillian from Court Junkie, and listener Tina Sanders is wondering, what was the hardest cleanup emotionally so far?
Well, for me, that's an easy one. That was the one that we talked about in Why I Love My Mother. That was by far the most difficult situation to deal with emotionally. You know, I think that any situation involving kids is going to be a bit hard to deal with, especially being parents. Fortunately, we have not had a single situation outside of that one incident.
So for me, Why I Love My Mother goes down in the books. I think that kind of goes without saying. But just so that I don't steal Ethan's answer and kind of recap on an episode you already heard, I have another one that, well, I still find myself thinking about from time to time. We were greeted by the kid of the deceased, and basically the person had shot themselves in the head in their home while the family was there. And the kid came to the door and was, I don't want to give too many details in case we do a episode on it. I don't want you to feel like you've heard it. But basically, the kid showed us to the scene or to the actual spot that it happened and basically offered us water, asked us if we needed any help bringing in equipment or even help with the cleanup or if we needed him for anything. So for me, that was really tough because I think he was basically trying to be strong for his family when, I mean, he was a young kid, like somewhere between 15 and 17. And I think it was a weight that he shouldn't have had to bear. And for me, I caught myself in a judgment, which I try to avoid at all costs because I don't know what anybody's been through. But my initial thought was upset and anger for the child that their parent would do that in the home. So for me, that was tough. It was just like, you know, I don't know. I just feel like that kid was just wrecked. So yeah, that was my emotionally hard one.
Hi, this is Jillian Pensavalli from the Hamilcast, a Hamilton podcast, and True Crime Obsessed. Jenny Elizabeth wants me to ask, have you ever cleaned up a situation that involved people or families that you knew personally? What about anyone famous or local celebrities?
Well, we do a lot more than crime scene cleaning, and we have done work at celebrity or famous people's houses. And there was one death-related scenario that we did clean up, but I'm not going to spoil it because it's going to be in an upcoming episode. So you're going to have to hang tight for the answer on that one.
Yeah, and we've done, you know, just out of respect and courtesy, we're not going to name drop, but we've done some big time celebrity situations, you know, like party situation, just clean up the aftermath of a humongous party or odor remediation for a celebrity who had, you know, a pesky animal, like a rodent, sneak into their house. So we've done things like that. A couple of them are big names that we would love to share, but just out of respect, we can't. So, yeah. And then in terms of have we ever cleaned up a situation that involved people or family that we knew personally, Okay, so I've had two situations, but not since starting the business. When I was a kid, there were some friends of mine that lived in the same apartment building, and I went over to spend time at their house, and their mom was a hoarder, and basically the whole house was up to our knees in trash and whatnot. And I remember going into their room and trying to like put some sort of order into the room, but it was far too much for me to do. And then my best friend in junior high school, the first time I went to her house, I learned that her mom was a hoarder, and it was the one and only time she had me over. She was completely ashamed, and I remember my friend melting down about it, and basically, you know, I helped her do dishes, and again, it was a task meant for a cleanup company. So that's as far as I've gotten in terms of people I've known personally, unless I'm forgetting something.
No, I don't think we've ever had it. We did have a friend of one of our workers, her mom passed away and went undiscovered for a few days. And I mean, she knew what our worker did. And, you know, I figured we would end up going out there to do the job. But yeah, it never turned into anything. So
this is Stacey from the Rough Giraffe podcast. And listener Ashley Maskell is wondering, what is the oddest thing ever requested to try to salvage on a job?
The oddest thing. I don't think we've actually had anything. I don't recall anything that was strange or odd that a person was requesting we save. Most people, if it's got blood on it and can't be cleaned, they don't want it. Oh, okay. Here's one. We were working for this lady had committed suicide on a bed, and you know it was a small caliber, so there wasn't a whole lot of spatter, but she did bleed out on the mattress. Now she happened to be Jewish, and according to her relative, they needed every single spot of blood that we removed. So when we cut out the mattress, we had to bag up all that stuff separately and turn that over to her rabbi so that she could be buried with it. And, you know, they have to, it's part of their religious beliefs where they have to bury the body as holy as possible. So, yeah, we didn't dispose of anything on that job. Anything that got blood on it or was used to clean up blood all had to go into a bag. So that one was a unique situation. It hasn't happened again, but, yeah, that was kind of strange.
Oh, man, this one is a tough one. I've actually been pondering it since I saw the question, and to be honest, I couldn't think of anything. But there was a family who asked us to save the deceased family member's porno collection, which is strange for me because normally we're trying to be really discreet and discard that stuff without alerting the family to it. So when they specifically asked for, it wasn't just the porn collection. They asked for all of the CDs, DVDs, movies, including any and all porn. So it just was kind of bizarre.
Hi, Vanessa. Vlado here from It's Not Rocket Surgery. Emma Wallace asked, in episode 2, you made reference to cutting out part of a mattress and then remove the mattress from the scene. Why did you cut it when you were removing it? Is it for evidence? Would the whole mattress not be kept if evidence was needed? Thanks for the show. Great work. Keep it up. Cheers.
Okay, well, first let me say, I answered Emma's question on social media, but I wanted to, it was a great question, and I wanted to bring it to the episode for other people in case they had that question. So basically biohazard disposal is incredibly expensive. So we wouldn't take a whole mattress and put it in as biohazard because it would be expensive. So we basically cut out the contaminated section and dispose of that in biohazard, and then we discard the rest of the mattress in the regular trash. So yeah, so that is pretty much why we cut it out. We will weigh it for the sake of our client. If it's more expensive for our time to cut it out than it would be just throw the whole thing away, then we'll just throw the whole thing, not away in the trash, but we would put the whole thing in biohazard. Whereas if it was more expensive to put it in biohazard, then we would spend the time cutting it out. So we kind of weigh that out on site, and it's specific to whatever it is that we're cutting or treating or whatever. Do you have any more on that? I don't know if I covered that.
No, that's pretty simple. Basically, if it's contaminated and can't be cleaned, we cut out the contaminated parts of it if we're not going to cut out a section of a piece of a mattress and just leave the mattress there, it's dumb. So we'll cut out the piece of the mattress, dispose of that in a biohazard, and as a courtesy, we'll dispose of the mattress.
Right. Same as a carpet. Like, instead of ripping up the whole carpet and putting that in biohazard, we just cut out the affected part, put that in biohazard, then remove the rest of the carpet for the regular trash.
Right. You know, part of our job, you have to realize, is we're not only removing any potentially biohazardous situation, we're also trying to remove the reminders of the incident. So if we were to just cut out holes in the carpet and leave the carpet, if someone walking in for the first time may not know what happened, but somebody who knew what happened sees that, they know exactly what's from, just brings it all back. So we just take it all out.
If you're enjoying this episode, I want to take a moment to tell you about Resonate Recordings. Resonate Recordings edited, mixed, mastered, and produced the episode you're currently listening to. They offer professional podcasting services to podcasters all over the world. Editing, mixing, mastering, custom production, sound design, music creation, hosting setup, and even RSS feed configuration are just a few of the services they offer. If you're considering starting a podcast or want to increase the quality of your podcast, go to resonaterecordings.com to see how they can save you time and help take your podcast to the next level. Resonate Recordings has a professional team of experienced audio engineers, producers, and musicians who all have a passion for podcasting. Right now, my listeners can go to resonaterecordings.com and get their first episode produced for free. No commitments, no strings attached. You too can have an expertly crafted podcast at no risk to you. So what are you waiting for? Go to resonaterecordings.com and complete the form at the bottom of the page. Just tell them Vanessa sent you. Now back to the show.
Hi, this is Tara Saraban.
And Barney Black from the Bloody Murder Podcast.
We have a question from Lisa Radent.
And it's a cracker of a question. What advice do you have for someone who would like to get into the field?
Yeah, we might listen to the answer, actually.
Yeah, I wish we had a time machine.
Yeah,
we could
go back
and hear it.
All right, so here would be my advice on that is, if you're looking to get into the field, I'd say go for it. I would recommend not reaching out to local crime scene cleaners for advice on how to do that, because the truth is they would just be arming the competition, if that makes sense. But if you reach out beyond, you know, in other states or other areas, you're more likely to find helpful people. So
yeah, if you're not real familiar with the subject matter, I would say go into Google and look up crime scene photos and realize that that's the type of stuff that you're going to be dealing with on an almost daily basis, you know, just as a trial, see how you do. And if it's something that doesn't bother you at all, you know, you may want to look at going the next step. If you start to get wigged out or anything, it's probably not the industry for you.
Right. The other thing is, when the movie Sunshine Cleaning came out, it's almost like everybody hopped on the bandwagon and was like, okay, I'm just going to start a crime scene cleaning company. And what a lot of people failed to realize is that you have investments and you don't set up a cleaning company and then all of a sudden everybody's knocking down your door to come and clean up. It's, you know, with like any business, I would say give it a good year or two of your time before you can expect to have it actually take off and you can actually start making money with it. So that would be my other advice is don't quit your day job and jump right into it. You know, obviously pour your heart and soul into it if it's something you want to do. Meanwhile, keeping yourself rooted where you are until the scale tips in favor of you doing it full time, if that makes sense.
That's pretty much what we did. I had a 9-to-5 until things got really busy. You know, it was basically just to make sure that our bills could still be paid while we were looking at getting bigger.
Hi, this is Tawny Plattis from the Dirty Bits podcast. And this question comes from Kelly Helt, who asks, how much do your kids know about what you guys do? And how do you explain it to them in an age-appropriate manner? And how do you describe your work to fellow parents? And have you ever gotten any odd reactions?
Okay, that's a good question. So with our older kids, we basically just told them that we help people clean up after someone dies or has an accident. And they understood that. And then as they get older, I've actually used, this is terrible, but, you know, they're doing stuff like leaning over a balcony on a second floor after I've told them 100 times not to. So I've shown them pictures of like cleanups that we've done to try to scare them. I do that with the older kids, and that's worked. And then, yes, maybe not the best parenting time. Okay, so I just lost parenting points, but you know what? If they're not going to listen to me, then they get to suffer a consequence. And that was a good consequence that made them listen. So
yeah, it worked. And when they were younger, it was as simple as we clean up blood.
Yeah.
Or when people are really messy. You got the picture across. They got it. You know, at first they were kind of like, "Ew, it's gross," but you know, they've accepted like anything else.
Yeah, exactly. It's never really come up too much with fellow parents unless they outright ask us what we do. I don't think we've really had any odd reactions. I think people are more fascinated with
it. Yeah, we don't get any specific reactions from family and friends. You know, we got the same reaction that we did when we tell anybody what we do. Like, "Oh, really? You do that? Or that's a thing?" But no ordinary reaction from them.
Right.
I did have one lady. We had our magnets on our car, which, you know, it's got our business name and, you know, what we do on there. And
no, okay, we have a chalk outline of a body on our magnets, and we needed to be kind of in your face to get people's attention. So it wasn't just another magnet on a car. Obviously, we don't roll up to a job site with our magnets on our car.
Yeah, that's exactly why they're magnets, so we can take them off whenever we go to a job. We're very discreet when we go to jobs, but when we're out and about, we've got our magnets on there. And so one of these days we were out and about, and this lady pulls up next to us. Her and her husband get out of their car, and they see our magnets, and they stop and they read it, and they go, "Is that real?" And I was like, "Yeah, it sure is." And she goes, "Pfft." And then her husband goes, "Join the military. That's what's real." I was like, "Well, okay. And thank you for your service, but see you later." It was a very strange reaction, but yeah, that's probably the weirdest one I've got.
Yeah, on the magnet front, I've been sitting in my car waiting for my kids to get out of a class of some sort. The baby's sleeping, so I didn't go with my kids in. And I've seen people taking pictures of the side of my car. You know, a few times I've had people knock on my window and be like, "Can I take a picture of your magnet?" It's like, "Yeah, go for it." So other times at stoplights, I'll get people like staring at me and, you know, mean mugging, grumpy face, staring, and it's like, "What is your problem? Why are you hating on me?" And then I realize, oh, it's the magnet.
Yeah, you get an array of emotions, but typically it's fascination.
Yeah. So, but yeah, in terms of parents, not really. It's usually like, "Whoa, wow, that's neat." But yeah.
Hi, this is Roseanne from the California Dreaming Podcast. Tay Davis asked, if being in this field of work has made you prepare for your just-in-case scenarios any differently.
For me, no. I'm not trying to brag, but I'm still kind of young. And, you know, I still feel invincible. I know that Vanessa may have a different answer.
Stop it. Yeah, I sadly haven't put into action our plan. When I was pregnant with the last baby, I did put together a life binder that had all of our bank accounts and assets and insurance information, social security cards. And so I put together like a really organized binder. And I also listed out, you know, my wishes if we were to both die at the same time. So I listed out our wishes for our kids and all the contact information, all that. But nothing's like fully legal, if you will. It is something that I recommend doing, in case you heard the last episode. It is something that we do suggest you jump on, but it's not something we've taken our own advice on. But we need to.
Yeah, call us hypocrites on that one.
Hey, Vanessa. Sam from True Crime Storytime. I have a question for you from Karen Silverstein Rodrigue. And she's asked, have your kids ever been teased because of what you and Ethan do?
I think our kids would specifically not be teased because of what Ethan and I do.
Yeah. if they have, they've never told us about it. But yeah, I think it would be more bragging rights than anything.
Yeah, I think if they started picking on my kids would turn around and be like, "Dude, do you know what my mom and dad do? Like, watch your words."
Yeah, it may be something to take a look at when they get a bit older. Right now, I don't even think it's anywhere in their heads what we do when they go to school or hang out with their friends.
Yeah. I don't know if this has been answered anywhere, but basically we have an almost 12-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 7-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 1-year-old. The almost 12-year-old is my stepdaughter. So our kids are relatively young, and I don't know that kids that age really sit around and talk about what their parents do for work. I think they're more fascinated with baseball cards or comic books or, you know, Barbie or whatever kids are interested in. But like Ethan said, it may be something to come up a little bit later. But then again,
we'll see what happens on career day.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even think about career day. Yeah, we'll see what happens on career day.
It's War Baby from Murderous Minors. Listener Deborah Nichols was wondering, how did you prepare yourself for your first few jobs? Did the stuff you cleaned up seem real? I'm guessing after a while you get desensitized, but the first suicide, first murder, etc. had to be rough, right? I remember you saying something in one of the episodes about most people don't last in this industry longer than a couple years, and I'm wondering if that's because maybe there's a PTSD factor?
My answer to this one is, in my training, I was, you know, kind of told to not think about what we're cleaning up. We're just there cleaning up stuff. And I think that carried me through a job or two, but I'm a really curious person. So I tend to notice the pictures on the wall, or if we're doing a cleanup in the kitchen and there's pictures on the fridge, you know, I tend to look at those. And I don't know that there was any sort of way to prepare yourself for the first suicide or murder. I had a little bit of an advantage to Ethan because Ethan just basically got thrown into the deep end when we, you know, when we got our first call, whereas I had done hands-on training. So I was already exposed to a scenario where you had every element. You had the maggots, you had the odor, you had the different type of blood situations, a different type of brain consistency. So I had already been exposed to that during my training. So yeah, for me, I don't know. I mean, I guess that would be the best way I could have prepared myself, was just doing my training. But I'll let Ethan answer.
Yeah, I didn't really have any. How do you prepare for something like that? There was really nothing I could do at that point in time. It was out of necessity that we had to do it. And so it was just something I did. And I'll also add that, look, there's definitely a fascination with, you know, true crime and crime scene cleaning and, you know, the whole subject matter. Just like all of you guys, I was just as fascinated with it. And, you know, I have become a bit desensitized to it, but there was really nothing that I've done that has, you know, really affected me or stuck with me, other than Why I Love My Mother. What happened in that episode was a little rough. There's nothing you can do to really prepare yourself, or at least that I needed to do. I don't know, maybe psych myself up, but yeah, it wasn't necessary in the first one, and hasn't been necessary since.
What's your take on why people don't last too long in the industry?
I think that's what it is. I think they fail to keep themselves distanced from what they're actually doing. They get too involved in the circumstances of what happened and
the individuals,
yeah,
the family,
everything. The whole picture. They just they let it get to them and they can't do anymore.
Right. Yeah, I can see that. You know, there's other reasons. There's obviously everybody kind of has their different thing. Like, you know, one person might be grossed out by vomit, whereas another person can handle vomit, but they might be grossed out by feces. And sometimes it's, you know, in our experience, it's not necessarily dealing with the blood. It could be the insects or the spiders or the hoarding, or it could be, you know, some other influencing factor that you might not consider. And truthfully, when we're hiring, I usually don't think anything broader than don't throw up on my job site, don't make a stink face if you smell, you know, like, you never know when you take a new guy to a job site how they're going to react. They may think they have a strong stomach and all of a sudden puke. And so I never think about, well, wait, are you sensitive to spiders? Are you scared of rats? Or, you know, but there could be a whole number of reasons that people don't last. It's not just necessarily the you know, the blood or the, you know, the bad situation or.
Yeah. I mean, there's also another thing is that when people hear about crime scene cleaning, it sounds like this, you know, really sensational and glorious job. And then when they actually get the opportunity and they get in there and start doing it and they realize it's just a job.
Yeah, it is. It's just a job. And the truth is too, you know, it's depressing. We actually lost a really, really, really good worker to the fact that it's just depressing. You know, I mean, he could stomach the blood, he could stomach the brains, he could handle the smell, he could, you know, tough it out on the hoarding, and he was a great worker. But after so many of those, it just was like, you know, it's just depressing. These people are just killing themselves, and there's more to life than your problems. And unfortunately, they couldn't see past that. It's just, you know, they were right there in the moment with a problem that seemed bigger than themselves, and they took their life. And eventually, it does kind of weigh on you. For me personally, I'm more of a people person, be like, oh my God, this is just going to pass, and, you know, just get through it and keep your head up. And, you know, it's probably not the best advice, but that's how I feel. And, you know, I want to hug everybody and undo what is too late to undo. But so that could be a factor as well, weighing in on why somebody might not make it.
Hi, this is Allison Carter from the Not Your Little Lady podcast. And listener Miranda Piles was wondering, what's something most people would be surprised to learn about your industry?
Man, that's a tough one. I've been sitting on this question for, I think, at least a week now, maybe a little bit longer, but I don't know.
I would say I have two things. One, I would say, first of all, that the industry exists at all. Because, I mean, that's something that we have set out to do from the beginning, is let people know that this industry exists and, you know, God forbid they ever need us, we're there for them.
Right.
The other thing is that that the services are covered by homeowners insurance in most cases. You know, it's something that, again, people don't even think about. And then when it happens, their first thought is, oh, insurance is going to cover that. You know, they have a lot of other stuff going on in their heads. But yeah, a lot of our jobs are covered by homeowners insurance.
Right. Yeah. I guess I've been in it for so long that I forget that there's that surprise factor, because it's just common knowledge for me now. But another thing maybe would be like my own surprise when researching neighboring states is they don't have the same regulations that California does for medical waste disposal or biohazard waste disposal. So for me, that was a surprise. Like, they can just go in and take a bloody mattress and just put it in the landfill. And so that is not the case in California, and it varies state to state. So that might be something that would be surprising to learn about.
Here's another thing is, I am not totally sure on the amount, but I think it's at least a $10,000 fine if you're caught disposing of contaminated material in a landfill.
Right.
So it's not something you want to mess around with.
Yeah. Which is weird, because, I mean, not to really gross everybody out here, but, you know, you have women who have their monthly cycles, and where does that stuff go? Usually in the trash can. So it's just kind of strange how they, anyways, off topic. Sorry about that.
Hey, Vanessa, this is Christina from the Cold Traces podcast. Listener Kelly D was wondering, could you ever cope with doing a cleanup for someone who you knew personally, such as a friend or a family member?
I think I could. In the beginning, I would have said no, but, you know, now that I've been doing it for so long and I guess kind of got desensitized to everything, I think I could do it. I haven't been confronted with the opportunity yet, but I think I could.
I think I could do it for friend and family, depending on who it was. For me personally, that's not an image that I'd like to see of my child or husband. So maybe a distant relative, but for my own, the sake of my imagination, I just would probably avoid it with regards to one of my close relatives.
I guess it depends on the circumstances too.
For sure. Yeah.
For example, if you shot yourself in the head one day, I don't think I would want to clean that up. But I mean, if you fell and hit your head and bled all over the floor, yeah, I can do that.
Yeah.
Hello, this is John David Booter. I've never made a podcast. However, a lot of you may know me from my work as a filmmaker, and I also made a podcast called Done Disappeared. Throughout our first season, we were able to answer many questions in the case of Clara Pockets, a young Pennsylvania woman who disappeared from a Piggly Wiggly parking lot in 1987. However, there are still several questions that continue to haunt us. One question that is still on our minds, as well as Jessica Heath's mind, and certainly the nation's, is what happened to Clara Pockets? Thanks for your time.
This is a question that is just sweeping the nation, and...
According to my Vincero, we're out of time.
Oh. Thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in next week for part two of our Q&A. And while you're waiting for that episode to drop, I've got a couple of trailers for other podcasts you might be interested in.
Loved one went missing. What would you do to get them back?
Police have been looking for Ivan Aguilar. He went missing in May 2014 at the age of 15.
A little girl who seemingly vanished from Milwaukee. Alexis Wayne
Walker is reported missing by his adoptive father.
We started this podcast to help find the missing who aren't otherwise covered in the media. We call, we request information. We're still left with nothing, and we need your help to solve them.
Somebody out there has to know something.
Mommy wants you home. I want my baby.
I miss her.
Join us for our true crime podcast that covers the disappearances of missing minorities and LGBTQ persons. These cases are solvable. Someone just needs to listen. This is the Missing Minority Project podcast.
On February 17, 1974, in Fort Worth, Texas, 17-year-old Carla Walker was abducted while making out with her boyfriend in the front seat of his car. Carla's brutalized body was found 3 days later in a cattle culvert near Benbrook Lake. No one has ever been held accountable for Carla's murder. The Gone Cold podcast is seeking justice for Carla Walker, as well as other victims of unsolved crimes and missing persons in the state of Texas. You can subscribe to Gone Cold podcast, Texas True Crime, at iTunes or Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or your favorite podcast app.
Hey, true crime fans. I'm Christina, and I'm the host of the podcast Cold Traces, an advocacy and investigation podcast for cold cases. Each season, I investigate one cold case by talking to the family and friends of an unsolved murder victim and to other cold case experts and advocates.
I've compared it to a backpack of bricks that I strapped on when he was killed.
There's a lot of questions that need to be asked that, you know, weren't asked.
This season, I'm investigating the mysterious murder of David Cox. David's time in the Marine Corps was the inspiration for the hit movie A Few Good Men. And shortly after the movie came out, David was mysteriously murdered execution style, and his killer has never been identified. Join me as I speak to those who knew David best. Subscribe to Cold Traces now on your favorite podcast app.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.